Welcome to Career Tours. This week, authenticity and professionalism, part one. Questions this cast answers are, which is better, being authentic or being professional? Are authenticity and professionalism mutually exclusive? Even though January is the traditional time for resolutions, you can have a fresh start anytime you want it. Manager Tools public conferences take place 2 to 4 times every month. In February, we're going to be in Frankfurt, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Your calendar probably doesn't have much on it yet for February, so book your training before it gets filled up with meetings. If February is already full, don't worry. We've got the schedule for the whole year on the website already, so you can plan for training at a time that works best for you. Register now at manager-tools.com and cross one thing off your list for 2023. Thank you for being here, Mark. I'm glad that I get to talk to you about authenticity and professionalism.
It's a pleasure.
Being professional seems to have gone out of favor, in favor of authenticity.
I think that's where all the press is, the popular press, but the popular management press is a sort of an oxymoron. It's popular, but it's not really about management. I think there are an awful lot of people who are being taught to be authentic at the expense of their colleagues thinking of them as unprofessional. That probably overstates the case. But certainly authenticity is a huge issue right now. And we don't want people to make mistakes. We want people to be authentic at work. But there is also a line that you need to understand that exists between you and the organization. And some people need to know that where that line is a lot better.
So the things we're going to cover are achieve results first, communicate frequently, then we're going to talk about what authentic versus professional really means, and then we're going to talk about 3 examples, what you wear, how you behave, and your passions.
Yeah.
And there is a Manager Tools cast called Authenticity and the Manager Tools Trinity, which is a different take on it's the same idea, but it's geared for managers to talk to their directs about this stuff. So if you are a manager and you want to talk to your directs, we recommend you go listen to that cast rather than try and pass this one into something you can talk about.
Yeah, I think the key point in that the Manager Tools cast is that the siren cry of authenticity for people, which, by the way, has been coming for many decades. There are people who would say the baby boomers, which is my generation, although I'm at the very end of the baby boom, born in 1960, the baby boomers started the whole thing of authenticity as a defense against a famous, the iconic representation of old school professionalism was the man in the gray flannel suit, which is everybody is a corporate drone kind of thing. And the moment you say drone, people know what you mean and they know they don't want it. But the baby boom actually started the idea that they wanted work to be different. As has every generation wanted work to be different. There's nothing new about that. Millennials or Gen X or Gen Z, you're not any different than any previous generation. And I feel bad that so often people say, oh, well, they're really different. They're not. But yeah, that cast basically says, hey, there will be people who want to be, who claim authenticity, and you'll have the sometimes uncomfortable responsibility of saying to them, what you're talking about is really not authenticity. What you're talking about is you want to do it your way, and the organization has already decided we're going to do it a different way. That's not authenticity. That is actually subordinating yourself to the mission of the organization. And a lot of people talk about being aligned with their organization's mission, and that's a really good thing. I told somebody the other day that most people get burned out because they're not aligned with the mission. And if the work is hard and you don't see its value in the universe or the world or your community, it's much harder to do that kind of hard work, grueling work, long hour work, that you don't feel connected to the output, to the result. And as we've said for many, many years, organizations exist to serve society. And if you're not seeing that service to society, it's hard. And so the manager's job, and most managers don't understand this, is to say, no, we bond together in this organization and we agree to pay what amounts to an organizational tax that we have to communicate with one another. You have to communicate with people that you may not naturally get along with, but because they're all under our roof, we treat them with respect and dignity. And you don't always get to do it your way. And I joke with people. I don't, it probably is too harsh, but I say, if you really want to be authentic all the time, just start your own company and keep it at one. Keep it at one employee. And you can always be authentic.
Because you'd need customers.
Yeah, well, no, there's nothing wrong with being that way. And I suspect certain authentic people will attract other customers who are inspired by your authenticity. But when you join an organization, particularly a large organization, it is incumbent upon you to understand the line between you and the organization. And it's the manager's job, as hard as it is. It's not the organization's job. It's not HR's job. It's not the CEO's job with an email. It's the manager's job to say, hey, you're asking for authenticity, but this is not a place where you get to fly your flag. You don't. The company has decided we use Excel and not this other thing that you want to use. And the decision's already been made. And if we are not, if the organization is not able to make decisions like that, it is then not able to benefit from people collectively agreeing on paying that organizational tax. And then it starts losing its ability to serve society. So, yeah. That was probably more than you wanted to hear.
No. No, that was the entire thing in a summary, but we'll start at the beginning again.
Yeah.
So the first thing is achieve results first. We never want you to let authenticity get in the way of achieving results. And the media kind of convinces people that authenticity comes first and that everybody is spending a whole lot of time thinking about what their authentic self is and how that affects everything. And managers and executives, the people that have influence over your career, are talking about results first. They say, does this person do a good job? They don't say, is this person authentic? First of all, yes. Results.
Yeah, and the way I would say it is, we want you to be authentic, but if you don't get results and you're authentic, you won't get to keep your job. And results are irrespective of how much authenticity you have. Now, I've had this conversation with people recently, and a person told me, well, I don't want to achieve results if I'm not feeling authentic. I said, well, okay, but just so you understand, the organization is built around results. It's not built around every person being authentic, and then if they are, hopefully achieving results. It is built around results, and then we want you to be authentic. It may be that, I hate to say this, but you were a hiring mistake, that you're no longer aligned with what your mission does and how, with where your organization does and how it does it. And that happens from time to time. And you need to find another place where you can be authentic and achieve results together.
And the clearest way that organizations report their assessment of your results is your performance review, which it's November. So of course, we're thinking about performance reviews. And we'd say in most organizations, performance reviews are not helpful, but that's an entirely different soapbox to get onto. But this assessment usually has some kind of summary with some levels on it, and you get, you know, exceptional performance at the top and expectations not met at the bottom. And there's a long way between those two. And so you can get away with sort of average results and believe that A, you're doing well, and B, your authenticity isn't getting in your way. But you could be at exceptional if you were willing to bend a little.
Yeah. And if you're not willing to bend at all, then you have no business being in a large human organization. Because just the fact that people joke about people complaining about the organization proves that that's part of being a part of an organization, is that the organization is not perfectly structured, tailored, finessed for every individual. It simply is not. And it never will be. And they're not designed to do that. The organization is supposed to choose wisely the people that comes to work for it. And the people are supposed to adjust to the organization and not the other way around. The problem, unfortunately, is too many organizations have not thought through what their mission is, what their vision, what their values are, and so on. And so it's hard to know how to tailor yourself. People end up tailoring to their boss because too many bosses who are tyrants have too much power and are unsupervised by their bosses, executives who aren't doing their jobs. And it makes it very hard for a new person to understand, how am I aligned? Am I aligned to this guy who doesn't seem to care about me at all? Or am I aligned to the mission? So on. It's hard.
All that stuff on the website that you read before you are hired is marketing, by the way. It's not it's not actually reality inside the company. It's marketing. So
yeah.
So the first rule is always results, because if you're not getting results, nothing else matters.
Right.
So the second part of the career tools, important, the two most important things, the two things you're career is based on is results and relationships. So the second part is relationships. And so the second part of this is communicate frequently. So over authenticity, we've got results, and now we're having communication, and we haven't yet got to authenticity. So the more you communicate, the better the relationships you will have. Even bad news is better than no news for relationships.
Can I go back just for a minute? You made a point there that is easily missed, and so I just want to highlight it. The two key deliverables for a successful career for any professional are results and relationships. Just in case you're a Manager Tools listener, when it comes to management, it's results and retention. That's what the organization measures, and that's good. You get measured based on results and retention because you represent the organization. That's what managers are and do. But in your career, you represent yourself. And so our experiences over the last 30 plus years have indicated to us that the two things that matter in careers are results and relationships. Since you're not responsible for retaining people in your career, you might in your role, but not in your career. However, Wendy just sort of assumed that everyone understood there are no relationships without communication.
Yes.
So when we talk about relationships, Wendy and I both sort of use the words interchangeably. One, communication is a behavior you can do. Relationships are an outcome you get from that communication. If you say to yourself, I really want good relationships, but I don't like communicating, that's like saying, I want steak, but I'm not going to pay for it. I want food, but I'm not going to pay for it. Or, you know, I want to go to college, but I don't want to study. Well, you go to college, but you won't graduate. Or, you know, I want to go to that school, but I'm not going to study hard enough to get the grades to allow me to get in. I often tell people unofficially, one of my rules is no whining. I mean, look, if you want X, work for X. If you're not willing to work for X, you don't get to whine about not having X. So when you were talking about relationships, and then you were at this bullet is actually communicate frequently. I think we need to be clear. Your career will devolve into two things, the results you produce and the relationships that you have. And to have those relationships, you must choose to communicate because it is a choice because you're a free human being and thank the Lord for that. Okay. So there are a lot of people you don't have relationships with, but there are some that you do. And those that you do are defined. All relationships are defined and shaped and measured and so on by communication, the behavior. And because this is career tools, and we talk about behavior all the time, not ideas, not feelings and so on, but actual behaviors, which can be measured. We focus on communication a lot. Horseman's second law, more communication is better. So if there's somebody on the opposite side of the world who you've never met and you've never spoken to, guess what? You don't have a relationship with them.
You can't, right?
Yeah.
It's just silly.
And look, it doesn't even matter how you communicate. There are some modes of communication, word choices and tone and pitch and timing and so on, that are more professional than others. But frankly, most people in the world don't need elegance or grace or a big vocabulary. They just need to be talked to. If you want to improve your relationship with anybody, just increase the frequency of your communication with them. And the next thing you do is increase the quality of your communication with them. You'll build trust with them and you'll have a relationship with them. It's just literally that easy.
Last year, we created MT Disk, a manager tools version of the Disk profile. We made it simpler, we made it smarter, and we made it cheaper because we wanted everyone to get the benefits of understanding their own style and being able to communicate with others of different styles. If you haven't taken your Disk profile yet, what are you waiting for? Mark and I both agree that it's the one thing that had the most impact on our careers. Go to managertools.com and look for MT Disk. The second rule is communicate to build relationships. If you're getting results and you have great relationships, it doesn't much matter if you're choosing authentic or professional. You're doing something right. And you should continue to do some that.
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about the professional authentic divide. Just keep doing you.
Good. Okay, now let's talk about the professional, the divide between authentic and professional.
Yes. But the vast majority of people who are working successfully in organizations, whether they're managers or not, are both authentic and professional. And yes. By authentic, I mean the colloquial common definition of being themselves.
But let's be clear, though, there are some people who, when they say authentic, it comes with a whole raft of things, mm-hmm. Often including political stances or global stances or social stances that generally have no place in the workplace. And so we want to be clear to you that if you're one of those people, and we're glad you are, we want you to be that person. But those kinds of things, when we talk about authenticity, we mean being yourself, being true to yourself. And a great deal of that kind of authenticity doesn't translate into the corporate world, into the corporate organization. The organization doesn't think that every single employee has a one vote in a plebiscite to discuss what the organization does about foreign relations with other countries. And you might think it should, but it does not. It's the rare organization that does. And essentially what that would mean is that your definition and our definition of authenticity are two different things. And that's okay. You're a free person. You're entitled to your own definition. But to try to address every possible stance that gets included in every possible person's mind about their definition of authenticity is too hard. So we've scoped it down to the issue of being yourself, which gives us a little bit of leeway to talk through various situations.
And by professional, we mean agreeing to certain behaviors that are helpful to the organization. Again, this is kind of narrow and broad at the same time. But there's no reason why these two should be mutually exclusive. You can be yourself and be a professional. Like they don't exclude each other. And you will be most successful if you can do both rather than choosing between
but
the
you
two.
Did say the vast majority. There is a small minority of times where you being your authentic self will clash with the rules of the company. Now, in general, we argue for fewer rules and more authenticity. But companies have a right to their rules, whether they make sense to us or not. And you have the right, and this is hard for people to hear, but essentially the bargain you make when you join an organization through your granted freedom of association, because you're a free people, is you have a choice between whether or not you want to work there. Now, some people say, well, that's not the choice I want. I want the choice to change the way the company has that decision. Well, okay, there are certain roles that have that power, but very few roles generally do have that power to change what a company's stance is on X, Y, or Z, including even the kind of technology it uses, which seems fairly mundane as opposed to a social or economic or political approach to things. But companies have a right to their own rules, just like all organizations of human beings do. That's why we have free association, so we can join groups that are aligned with our values and so on. And your choice is not that you get to withhold your results and your relationships from the organization. Your choice is simple, just like the company's choice is simple. They get to choose what they want to do as a group, and generally there's some organizational structure that imbues certain people in the organization with the ability to make those decisions. And the choice you have from a social perspective is, do I want to work here or not? It's not, you don't get a choice to say, well, I am going to withhold my work, but you still have to employ me while I attempt to change how the company feels about X, Y, or Z. That's not the compact that exists between you and your company. You know, if you want that to be the compact, I would suggest to you, you are fighting hundreds of years of evolution, and that's okay because that's what humans do. And so what you should do is quit the company you're at and start your own firm and codify it into the values and beliefs of the company that at any time, any person who works for you can withhold their work because they disagree with a corporate decision on something. And you are required to adjudicate with that person or have a vote, a plebiscite or something like that in order for them to come to grips with allowing you to have their work product again. I dare say when I put it like that, people will say, well, that doesn't seem right. If I were the boss, I get to make the decisions, right?
Yeah. It's funny that, right? So authenticity is thought to be that freedom to be yourself. But the problem in an organization is when one person's freedom causes a negative reaction in others, which affects the productivity of the organization. So, for instance, let's say your authentic self wishes to wear t-shirts with political slogans on them. And that often comes up against some kind of company rule that says you can't have political stuff on your t-shirts because it causes friction between employees and teams. And if you didn't think it was going to cause a stir, you wouldn't be wearing it, right? People wear things and they know the reaction they're going to get. So you can't argue that nobody's going to be affected by the fact that I'm wearing this t-shirt. They are. And, you know, there's rarely something about you can't wear a t-shirt that says your sports team's name on it, because that engenders some gentle ribbing and then we all carry on. Whereas a political slogan starts discussions and heated things and affects a team's productivity, you know, while they're distracted by this whole notion of whatever this political slogan is.
And if you like political slogan t-shirts, you think they're a cultural meme and you want to wear them and you don't mean to offend anyone, we're okay with that. But you can't wear them in the vast majority of workplaces in the world today. You certainly couldn't wear them in China. But in the world who is listening, you know, there are over 100 countries where we have listeners. If you wear a political slogan t-shirt to work and you genuinely wear it because it's a cultural icon from the 60s or, and you don't really necessarily agree with that. And tomorrow you may wear a t-shirt with the opposite, what would appear to be the opposite or the other side's slogan or something. And you don't mean to offend. It still is inappropriate because the company's rules address behavior, not intent. We'll come back to this over and over again in the next 50 years of manager tools and career tools and executive tools and any other podcast that our firm and in its future ever starts. The company focuses on behavior. And they have discovered that, as Wendy said, t-shirts with slogans like that are ineffective for the organization. And when you go into the public square, unless you're going to a political rally, it has been widely agreed to in because of culture, not because of society, believe it or not, but because of culture in humankind's history, that it is better to not do that in order to assure the tranquility of our interactions with each other. You know, the old saying is that without civilization, life would be nasty, brutish, and short, because we would all kill each other with all the friction that happens. My dad used to tell me the definition of conflict is two human beings in the same county. And so even if you don't mean anything by it, the behavior of wearing that shirt is precluded. You cannot. And what would happen is your boss would come up to you and say, hey, can I give you some feedback? Sure. When you wear that shirt, it could create tension and conflict. And so I'm going to ask, would you please not wear that shirt ever again? And if this person pushes back, says, I didn't mean anything by it. I don't actually believe this slogan. I just like political t-shirts. You'd say, thank you for letting me know. And can you not wear that shirt or any other political slogan t-shirts in the future? And it's just kind, polite feedback. That's all it is.
That reminded me of something. If you don't believe that tacit agreements exist culturally, when I moved here, I kept bumping into people in the street. And one day Mark said to me, you do realize that's because you tend to walk on the left and all of the Americans are walking on the right of the pavement. And that's why you're bumping into each other. So nobody ever told me, if you're on the underground, it does tell you to stand to the left, but nobody ever tells you walk on the left. It's a cultural thing that British people do because we drive on the left. And there's this tacit, this never mentioned, this absorption you have of this agreement that you will walk on the left. When you come
here, culture.
You bang into people. So it absolutely exists, even if you don't believe it.
Yeah. And you had it happen to you. I had it happen to me in Australia. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm walking and I'm literally like, why are people in my way? Which I often think anyway. But I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, oh my gosh, I'm just wrong here. And suddenly I went to the other side and all was well.
That's right. So across all companies, the majority of the rules for workplace etiquette and comportment are reasonable and necessary for the effectiveness and the efficiency of the people in that workplace. We believe that those rules exist because of the workplace and they are reasonable and they are the ones that make the company more productive, because it's a little bit like evolution. If the rule didn't make the company more productive, it would have died. They'd have changed it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, look, we've had this discussion before about Google. Google was famous for a number of years of allowing, even encouraging, political groups and conversations on Google's internal communications and so on. And people would ask me about it and I'd say they're wrong and they're going to regret it. And people would laugh at me. They would say, no, this is the new company. This is the modern company. These are young people who are really smart. Google has a lot of very smart people. Every time I go there, I'm amazed. I feel very dumb and appropriately so, because compared to them, I really am dumb, except about one thing, management. And there was open discussion. I mean, and sometimes heated about, we like this guy, you like that guy, Republicans, Democrats, conservative, liberal, whatever, discussions about all kinds of social issues, economic issues, political issues, cultural issues. And people would say to me, it's been a few years and Google still has that policy. I said, yeah, just wait, they'll figure it out. And about 2 years ago, they figured it out and they banned all that stuff. Now, people said, oh, Google's acting heavy-handedly. No, they're not. Google attempted to create a culture, and in fact, they did create a culture, where you could have those kinds of conversations at work. And that culture created so many problems, so much friction, so much tension, so much anger, so much flame-throwing on email and in other internal communications. It got to the point where the company couldn't stand it anymore, and people wouldn't even go to meetings with other people because of their political beliefs and so on. And so they had to ban it. Google attempted to swim upstream against the tide, a cultural tide. And by culture, I mean the thing that predates society, a la what Wendy was just talking about, relative to where you walk on which side of the road, which happens because humans interact with one another. And good things, things that help us work together in peace, in harmony, in safety, so that we grow richer and taller and healthier, and we are able to help more people, those good things get copied by other people and more people doing them. And the people that do the opposite thing end up being a smaller and smaller minority. Now, it's not passed down to your kids, but gradually people learn that is the way things are done in this community, in this nation, in this world. Certainly, you could say, Google did it wrong. I'm going to do it right. I want that kind of stuff at my company. I think, what was the other big social media company that just got rid of stuff and gave buyouts to a bunch of people? I can't remember who it was. Basecamp, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah. In any event, people think, well, companies are just, they want to. Somebody told me, no, all the companies have these terrible ideas. And the reason they ban these discussions is because they want the power to enforce their ideas on the world. And if I work there, then they can enforce them on me. And I say, no, that's not why they do it. They don't do it because of their political beliefs, because many organizations' beliefs at the top are very different, or this generation's leaders are different than the founders' ideas and so on. And no, they do it because they want to achieve results, and they've discovered that there are things you don't talk about at work, like religion and politics and sex. That's why, as famously has been said by many Americans, that's why the British only talk about the weather. And it's a joke, because most human beings privately want to talk about religion and politics and sex. And you don't do that because you need to have some rules for comportment that allow people to get along with one another.
And we know this because most organizations have developed similar, if not the same, rules over the time there's been organizations through trial and error. And, specific situations have caused people to create specific rules. But the fact that the vast majority of companies have coalesced around similar rules or etiquette for their employees kind of suggests it's just about people getting on and being productive more than something authoritarian and trying to put people in boxes.
Right. And when you assert your authenticity, which is the way people describe it in social media so often, I was being authentic when I challenged my boss or whatever, and you challenge some rule, which the company has learned over decades and decades and decades, that the rule is fair and reasonable. It's not perfect, but it's fair and reasonable. It's an accommodation to the fact that when humans get together, there can be some sharp elbows and some hurt feelings. If you challenge that because of your authenticity, when the organization, and you challenge it to your boss is obligated in many cases to toe the company line, and there will probably be consequences for you. And again, the social compact, the contract between you and the company is, we have some rules and you have to follow them. And if you don't want to follow them, we respect that. And we admire you for your individuality, your authenticity, and your courage. And you will have to go somewhere else. Otherwise, everybody gets to search their own rules and then it's chaos. You have to decide, I want to stay. And if I do stay, it is incumbent upon me, it is required on me to conform. Okay. Now, if your authenticity is, I refuse to conform to any rules that anybody states, then you can never join any other organization. You must choose to be on your own, which may in fact be a great choice for you.
And the rules have changed over time.
Yeah. Oh, look at dress codes. Holy moly. Yeah. By definition, right?
According to times, according to without a hat.
Yes. Well, I mean, John F. Kennedy broke all kinds of fashion rules when he was the first American president to not be inaugurated without a hat, right? And then he wore sunglasses. God forbid. Yeah. So the thing I love that you put in these show notes, for those of you who are licensees, I encourage you to download the show notes. And we've been saying this a number of different ways, but Wendy has said it best. A large number of people in close proximity need rules in order to address the inevitable tensions that different behaviors and communications cause. This does not prohibit authenticity, but instead seeks to promote collaboration. The authenticity asserted by an individual is fine, but only to a point. No organization allows anyone to indulge their authenticity when it's contrary to what the vast majority of the company want, which is peace and tranquility.
We're about halfway through everything we have to say on authenticity and professionalism, so we will pick up again next week.